All right, tonight we're going to finish up the life of Hezekiah and probably do a quick review since we started this class about probably 6 weeks ago. We just had singings and I wasn't here. So was Hezekiah a good king?
Yep, mostly.
How about his father? Was his father a good king?
No.
Ahaz? No, Ahaz was a very wicked king. One of the most terrible things I think that he did is he liked the altar that was from Assyria better than God's altar. So what did he do?
He had someone go and make a copy of it.
Okay, someone made a copy of it. What did they do with it?
Put it in the Lord's temple.
Okay, they took the one. They took God's altar away, and then they used that altar. Think God would be happy with that? No, clearly not. I mean, with Nadab and Abihu as a good example. So Hezekiah comes in. The temple's in ruins. So it takes, 6 weeks to get the temple cleaned out and rededicated. And then he asks the people to make a covenant, which they do. And then he also wants to do the Passover. But what was unusual about his desire to do the Passover? Something none of the other kings in Judah had done. Well, yeah, he did do that. But there was something unusual that he did. Anybody remember?
He asked the 10 tribes.
Okay, he sent runners all through the 10 tribes, and he invited them to come to Jerusalem to keep the Passover. Now, nobody had done that since the days of Rehoboam. And a lot of people persecuted, but a lot of people came. And so he reestablished all of those things. They went out, broke down all the altars, and from that point on, Hezekiah was a very good king. In the, I think it was the 14th year of his reign, Assyria comes with the intent to do what? Okay, destroy them. And so he pleads with God. God gives them grace. And in one night, how many died?
180,000.
Okay, 185,000 died in one night. And as a result of that, Hezekiah, who else had been able to beat Assyria?
Nobody.
Matter of fact, isn't that what he taunted them with when they were on the wall? He said, what God has been able to deliver any other nation from my hand, and your God will not be able to deliver you either. Well, what happened?
He was mistaken.
He did deliver them, and as a result of that delivery, what did all the other nations think about Israel and about Hezekiah?
He got all the glory.
Okay, God got glory and he got glory. That's the interesting thing. If you look at that verse at the very top of page 11, let's go ahead and read that. Ken, you want to do that, please?
Thus the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the land of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, and from the hand of all others, and guided them on every side. Many brought gifts to the Lord at Jerusalem and presents to Hezekiah, king of Judah, so that he was exalted in the sight of all nations thereafter.
Okay, so you got this little nation of Babylon, and Babylon is afraid of Assyria, but what happened after what Israel did? Not be afraid anymore. So they send an embassy, and they send envoys to bring gifts and to praise Hezekiah. And so, and I mentioned to you last week, we need to keep this verse in mind because it's going to be very important later. There's two important statements in this verse. The first one is in verse 22, that God guided them on every side. That's something we're going to talk about at the very end of the lesson, how God guided them on every side. And then the second thing is that he was exalted in the sight of all nations thereafter. So when did it come to an end? Not till he died. He was a great man. What happens when you become a great man? You can get proud, right? You start forgetting, how did I become great? Matter of fact, was it David who said that, you know, when we're rich, we have to think about what? Who gave us the what? The power to get rich. And when you think of it like that, it's only because of God's grace that I have any of these things. Whether you're a millionaire or a billionaire, or you only have $100 in your pocket, what's the difference in you?
Nothing.
You didn't do anything special. It was just the providence of God, the gifts of God at birth, the country and the nation you lived in, and the opportunities, the time and the chance that God allowed to happen. So it takes away any of that. Okay, let's jump then to some new material. We get down to the middle of the page. Isaiah prophesies Hezekiah's death. So he is, I don't know how you'd put it. I mean, how would you feel if nations all over the world are sending you gifts and you're getting wealthier and wealthier and God's been on your side and all the nations are glorifying and God and glorifying you, and then Isaiah knocks on the door and says, set your house in order, you're going to die. Would that be a... I mean, even for us, if a prophet came to us today without all of that and said, set your house in order for you're going to die, would we be happy? So Hezekiah is going to weep bitterly. But let's go ahead and let's see. Brian, you want to read that one? 2 Kings 20, verse 1.
In those days Hezekiah was sick and near death, and Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, went to him and said to him, thus says the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live.
Okay. Now, in the law, it's not so much like this. As a matter of fact, it's not like this at all today. But in the law, if you served God faithfully, what was your reward?
Well, a long life.
Okay, material blessings, right? If you serve me, remember what he told Solomon? I'm going to give you what you didn't ask for. I'm going to give you riches. I'm going to give you honor. And if you stay faithful to me, I'm going to do what? Lengthen your days. So you're going to get wealth and honor and long life. Well, so what's Hezekiah's expectation? He's got the wealth. He's got the honor. He's a faithful man. So what's his expectation going to be?
Long life.
I'm going to get long life. Well, when he's cut off, I think he was like 42, I think it was. We'll find it in just a minute. So, is that very old?
No,
he's still a young man, and it just cuts him to the heart. Cameron, you want to read that very last verse on bottom of page 11?
Isaiah 38?
Yeah.
And Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed to the Lord and said, remember now, O Lord, I pray, how I have walked before you in truth and with a loyal heart and have done what is good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept bitterly.
Okay, so... he's not like Paul. Well, how would Paul feel if God said, set your house in order, for you're going to die?
Ready.
Paul said, that'd be very far better. So would he be weeping bitterly? No, I can't say he'd be rejoicing, but I don't think he would take the same approach here. But we're living in a different era. In this era, the expectation was physical benefits for spiritual service. That's how God did it under the Old Covenant. He told them, if you serve me faithfully, then you will have wealth and you will have honor. You won't have any miscarriages. Your fields will produce. But if you don't serve me, what's going to happen? Exactly the opposite. But what about today? If I get a good harvest, is that God telling me something? No. Today it's just time and chance. There may be some providence there, and you're going to thank God either way. But it's very different then. Okay, so now we have the prayer. Did we read that one yet? I just had a mind glimpse. Did we?
Yeah, Cameron did.
Okay. All right. Cameron, you read that? Very bottom one? Hezekiah turned his face to the wall? Ick. All right. Well, better to ask than to say, okay, now that it's been read. All right, so what's his prayer? What? It's fervent prayer, but what's his leverage? What does he try to leverage here?
His service.
Okay. He says, I've walked before you in truth. Now, is that true?
Yeah.
Absolutely true. I've walked before you with a loyal heart. Is that true? Yeah. I've done what is good in your sight. Yeah. So, and then, but does it say, here's what I want?
It implies it.
What we have here is a necessary inference, right? It's not directly stated. He doesn't ask for his life. He just says, remember now how I walk before you in truth with a loyal heart and have done what is good in your sight and weeping bitterly. So obviously, I think behind the scenes that's happening, but his primary goal here, and I think it's important because when tragedy strikes you and I, are we going to be able to say that? And that's an important question for you to think about. If tragedy strikes me, am I going to be able to say, Lord, I have served you faithfully my whole life, and I've struggled and I've strived, and I pray that you will bless me in this matter. Any of us feel a little uncomfortable with that? And of course, if you say, yeah, well, then that's an area that we would need to get to work on, because, you know, that verse at the very top of page 12, the effective fervent prayer of a righteous man does what? It has a lot of power. It avails much. But what do you have to be before you can offer an effective, fervent prayer?
Righteous.
You've got to be righteous. And too many people, they don't have that. They are not righteous, which means doing what is best for God and man, struggling always to be fair and equitable and doing what is right. So, but this prayer is so powerful that how far does Isaiah get? He doesn't even get out of the city. So what is it? Maybe, you know, even if the city's a mile or two across, it's not going to take more than, you know, an hour to get out of there. So in the first hour of Hezekiah's prayers, what does God do? He relents. Okay, he relents. So, Jeff, 2 Kings 20, 4 through 6.
And it happened before Isaiah had gone out into the middle court that the word of the Lord came to him, saying, Return and tell Hezekiah, the leader of my people, thus says the Lord, the God of David your father, I have heard your prayer, I have seen your tears, surely I will heal you. On the third day you shall go up into the house of the Lord, and I will add to your days 15 years. I will deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend this city for my own sake and for the sake of my servant David.
Okay, so that a good answer?
Yeah.
Could we live with that answer? Yeah, it's a wonderful answer. It's the exact answer for everything Hezekiah was hoping for. His prayer was heard, his tears were seen, God promises to heal. Not only does he promise to heal, but in verse 6, he gives him what?
15 years.
Is that a blessing, by the way, to know you're going to die in 15 years? It might be today, but when that 15 years starts to come to an end, is it going to be weighing on your mind? Isn't it better to just not know when you're going to die? I think about that with Peter. Every time Peter gets into a tough spot, what's he got to be thinking?
This might be it.
Because God told him, when you're old, you're going to be taken where you don't want to go. And so Peter had to think about that. Well, now Hezekiah's got to think about that. And then one more thing. I'm going to deliver you and the city. I'm going to defend the city. And I'm going to take care of it for the sake of David and for the sake of my own name. Johnny?
You know, down through the years, in times of war, times of combat, men say, I don't know the Lord. But when they get in that tight situation, they start to pray. Now, I have known of a couple that prayed hard that they would live through this particular situation, and they did. And yet, knowing that they are not a Christian, and yet they came through it, is that God's will, or is that just a fact of life that it wasn't his time to die?
Well, that's not a question, of course, that we can answer. Time and chance does operate. Many people who never pray get out of it. On the other hand, God may be giving them that opportunity. We won't know until the judgment day. That's the difficulty with these kinds of things. When you start trying to prognosticate, in other words, when you start trying to figure out how God feels about you by what's going on in your life, are you going to succeed? No. We have to have the Word. Well, what does the Word tell us about God's answering prayers in the first age, the Christian age? What does he say? Okay. But let's say that I'm praying to God. Here I am, a sinner somewhere off in California, and I say, Lord, I need to know your word. Can God send me a preacher? Can he hear that prayer? Yeah, I think he can hear that prayer. But if I'm off in Vietnam or if I'm off in Korea about to get killed and I say, Lord, I would like to hear your word, could he answer that prayer if he knows I'm going to be converted later? Well, he could. But how would we know? Well, we wouldn't. And so, Johnny, your question is not answerable. And I've had to answer that same question from my son the night that the guys in one bedroom were all killed, and he wants to know, why wasn't I taken? These guys weren't Christians, and what's my answer? I don't know. What can I say to that? I mean, it's a bitter thing. He would have gladly died in their place because he was right with God, but God didn't give him that choice. So what do you say? Charles?
Yeah, also, that right there has to do with guilt. A lot of times, a lot of men has been in combat like that, and someone will die or whatever, and you don't die or whatever. And you wondering about that. Why didn't that happen to me?
Right.
You know, whether you were a Christian or not. But it has a lot to do with guilt. And there are classes that individuals can go to learn more about that.
Right.
I know I had to go through that also, too. I have one other question. I know that David wasn't living during this time right here, but what it says, I will defend this city for my own sake and for the sake of my servant David. Why is that? Does it have something to do with the faithfulness of David or something?
Well, no, God swore with an oath to David that one of his seed would sit on a throne.
Okay.
And there's got to be a nation for the throne to sit on, so he's got to keep the nation going for the sake of David.
For the sake of David, okay.
And not just David, but Abraham and the others. That's what Paul talks about in Romans 11, is that the root, the fathers that God has made all these promises to, is why we're getting all these benefits, not just us.
Right.
So, God had made that promise to David, and so he was... You know, Isaiah, what did Isaiah say? If the Lord hadn't left us a remnant as he promised to David, what would we be like? Sodom and Gomorrah. And if they'd been like Sodom and Gomorrah and they didn't have those promises, it would have been wiped off. George, I'm sorry, I saw your hand the whole time, but...
Well, a couple of things. One in response or to add to what Charles just said, Christ came through the seed of David. And that's what this is referring to, is the coming of Christ as God would had prophesied, it seems to me, or at least that's included in there. But the other thing I was going to say is that so often, it seems today, if people get in tight spots, they try to bargain with God. And they say, God, if you would just get me out of this tower in New York that's about to fall down, I'll do this and that and the other.
Right.
And then they forget about it when they get out safely.
Sure.
If they do.
And like I said, if you get yourself in that spot, it's not the time to be bargaining with God. It's the time to say, Lord, I've been faithful to you and I've done all this and I know it's going to be okay either way, but please, if it's your will, I'd like to continue living. Even Paul said that. He said, it's more needful for you that what? I keep on living, so I don't know what to choose. I mean, better for me to go, but I need to stay here to help you. And a lot of people feel like that. I know I feel like that. That's a good point. All right, we're going to run out of time here, so I'm gonna have to kick it up a little bit here. He asks for a sign. Now, sometimes when people ask for signs, what does God say?
No.
Don't you trust me? I said this is going to happen. What do you need a sign for? But we're going to find out later. This was a horrible trauma for Hezekiah. He had a very, very difficult time dealing with this. He loved God and he trusted God. And when God's prophet said, you're going to die, what does he know? Because he trusts God. He knows he's going to die. Well, now he is so afraid that he doesn't want to have to wait those 3 days before he goes to the temple. So what does he want right now? Lord, I'd like a sign. I don't want to have to live the next 3 days. And what sign does God give him?
Shadow.
The shadow. He moves the shadow back 10 degrees. All right. But the most important thing that comes out of this is the song or the writings that Hezekiah did. So let's see. John, you want to read that for us? Very bottom of page 12.
Isaiah
38, 9 through 13, this is the writing of Hezekiah.
This is the writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah. when he had been sick and had when he had been sick and had sickness, I said to the in the prime of life, I shall go to the gates of Sheol. I am deprived of the remainder of my years. I said, I shall not see Yah, the Lord, in the land of the living. I shall observe men no more among the inhabitants of the world. My life span is gone, taken from me like a shepherd's tent. I have cut off my life like a weaver. I have considered until morning.
Okay, so now keep in mind, this was after he got well. So this was long after. I mean, it was 3 days before he even got well. So he's now musing on this near-death experience, and he is telling us what went through his mind and his heart. And as I say, when you see verse 13, I have considered until morning. Well, when Isaiah comes, I mean, if you get into a near car accident and you think you're going to die and you come out of it okay, are you happy again right away? Sometimes you got to sleep on it. I mean, the adrenaline is there, and you're just so afraid. I've had several experiences like that. This last trip, we looked up, and a semi was coming right at us from the other lane. And he managed to turn his truck and get it around, but we were already by him by then. And I'll tell you, I mean, it took an hour for me. I mean, I was alive, and I was happy I was alive, but it took a long time to get over that. Well, this is even worse. So he's up all night. And he's considering until morning that, you know, what would have happened if he had died. And he says, in the prime of my life, I shall go to the gates of Sheol. Now, is it good for him to think like this? You know, we turn to the next page, and what does he say in Ecclesiastes chapter 7? What does he say about this? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. In other words, take some time and really think about that, because that is an opportunity for you to get your life back on track. Nothing better than a good near-death experience to wake a Christian up and make them serve God better. And what's interesting, what's nice, is when you have that near-death experience and you say to yourself, there's not much more I would do different because I'm already faithful, but I'm really glad this happened to me because it just makes it that much more dedicated. So Hezekiah, in the first part of his writings, talks about what a terrible event it was and how deeply it shook him. Then, in the next section, Isaiah 38, don't you want to read that, please? 15 through 17.
What shall I say? He hath spoken to me, and he himself hath done it. I shall walk carefully all my years in the bitterness of my soul. O Lord, by these things men live, and in all these things is the life of my spirit. So you will restore me and make me live. Indeed, it was for my own peace that I had great bitterness, but you have lovingly delivered my soul from the pit of corruption, for you have cast all my sins behind your back.
Okay, so he had bitterness of soul. He talks about that. I shall walk carefully all my years in the bitterness of my soul. In other words, at this point in the experience, he thinks it's going to stay with him for the rest of his life. Unfortunately, does it? See, he thinks it will. And most people think that way, don't they? I mean, like George was saying earlier, when you're in the building and you're asking God to forgive you and get you out of there, and you get out of there, don't you think you're going to feel like that the rest of your life? That day? And then you wake up the next day and the next day, and pretty soon life goes back to normal. So what does he say? He says in verse 15, I shall walk carefully all my years, however long I live, in the bitterness of my soul. In other words, I'm going to remember this. I'm going to learn from this. Then he says in verse 17, it was for my own peace that I had great bitterness. And then he thanks God for the forgiveness of his sins. So this man, even though he's devout and godly, has this experience truly affected him? And again, do we have to go through this, or can we live through it with through Hezekiah? And that's what these things are in here for, is so that we can empathize with Hezekiah, we can feel what he feels, we can grow from what he felt, and we don't have to go through it ourselves. That's why in Psalms 119 it says, "You make me wiser than my enemies, and you make me wiser than ancient people, because I meditate on your word, and I'm learning things that I don't have to experience." And so through the experiences of others, we can get wisdom that will carry us through to the end of our life. Well, he's convinced that's what's going to happen here. And then the last thing he says, let's see, where Richard, do you want to read that? 38, 19, and 20?
Okay. The living man, he shall praise you as I do this day. The Father shall make known your truth to the children. The Lord was ready to save me. Therefore, we will sing my song with stringed instruments all the days of our life in the house of the Lord.
Okay. So, the first thing he says is, he shall praise you as I what? As I do this day. And then he makes a promise at the end of verse 20. All the days of our life, we will sing songs to you. And basically, isn't that what God told us all to do in Psalms 90, which is purported to be a song written by Moses? Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. We're just about up to the new year, so you'll be getting a sermon on this again. I do it every year, so you get tired of it after a while, but it's for you it is safe, is what Paul says. I repeat and repeat, but it's not tedious. Okay, so Hezekiah has made all these promises and all these commitments. Now, I want to read this last paragraph because I think it's important to think about that. Right above Hezekiah's final days, it says, before leaving this amazing event, we need to consider carefully, why did God do this? Why send Isaiah to him in this manner? And there are three possible answers that I came up with. You might have another one. The first is an offer to allow him to leave this life at the pinnacle of his faithfulness to God and enter into his rest. So it was an offer. It was an offer that God gave to him. The second, a clear sign to Hezekiah that will insulate him from pride. And he was going to die, and from that day until the end of his life, he would, and I'm going to change that to could, he could have remembered that God had spared him and that these precious days, however long they are a gift. Now, when you wake up in the morning realizing, I could have died this many years ago and I'm still here and this is a day that God has given to me, does that change your thinking? See, it should. And so that's the second thing. The third thing, knowing the number of his days, 15 years, would help him fulfill God's desire for each of us that he would number those days. Because after 1 year, what's he going to know? 14 left. After 5 years, I got 10. I'm thinking like that myself. I just turned 62 a couple months ago. And maybe I got 18 years. Maybe I don't have 18 years. But I know I got less years to live now than I've lived, and I better get busy because I don't know where we're going. But I know one thing, when I stand before God, I don't want to be like I am right now. I want to be a lot better. Did I see a hand? Oh, Brian?
Yeah, so to me, I wonder also, when you read this statement about how God had cast all his sins behind his back, it makes me wonder in that passage we read earlier where God promised to hold Assyria off, if maybe he was told that because God wasn't pleased with him. Now, we're not told that, so I know we're speculating. Maybe Assyria would have come. God could have spared him from being carried off into captivity. You know, with God's providence, we don't know. Now, right. Manasseh was not ready to reign. He would have only been like 2 or 3 years old.
No, he wasn't born yet. He was 12 when he started reigning.
Well, right, but so if he was given 15 years, wouldn't he have been 2 or 3?
No, he would be born in 2 or 3. 15 minus 12.
Right, so but he was 12 when he reigned.
Yeah.
So if he was given 15 more years of life, wouldn't he have been 2 or 3? Anyways, I don't know. Maybe my math's wrong.
Okay, we'll have to do this word problem later.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is, with God's providence, we don't know if now was the time for Assyria to carry off them into captivity.
Right.
There were a lot of unfaithful people who didn't turn back to the Lord. So anyways, I'm probably reading too much into it, but we just don't know because God chose not to tell us. So.
Well, and you're right. I mean, I'm looking at everything that's going on in the world right now. Do you feel like the world's very stable right now? You know, you've got to follow what's going on in the world right now. It's a scary time. I keep thinking to myself, you guys keep fooling with this, and you're going to bring something terrible down on yourself. And it's just been, I mean, we've been threatening Russia, and we've been telling Russia this, this, and this, and China this, and I know we have to stand up, but you rattle too many cages, and then you go after Israel, and pretty soon, what can happen? And you don't know what's going to happen. So it's this, as I say so many times, this is not the time to be unfaithful to the Lord, because things can change so quickly. We're just not in a stable time right now. And I have no idea what God's doing, but I kind of feel like Habakkuk. I'm working a work that you wouldn't believe if I told you. And I mean, it's all, you can see these chess pieces moving here, and it may all come to nothing, but we're poised right now for some interesting events to occur. And need to be thinking about that, numbering our days, because, yeah, I'd like to think I got another 12 years, but what did Jesus say this very night? Your soul will be required of you. George, did I see your hand up earlier?
No, but I'll raise it right now.
Oh, okay, you go ahead. Raise it right now. I just asked George every 5 minutes. Got anything to say?
I think we need to be kind of like you mentioned, Paul, being that we're ready to go any day, and we may feel that we have a reason, like he did, for staying, but I find it interesting in the last few years of my mother's life in visiting the nursing home she was in, various people's attitude. For instance, there was one lady, I think she was 93 or 4 when she was saying it a lot. She wasn't even a Christian, but to the best of my knowledge, but it amazed me that she would often say, I'm ready to go. I don't know why God doesn't take me. And I think in some respects, we ought to have that attitude that we're ready every day.
Right. But it's a lot easier to say that when you can't see anymore and you can't walk anymore and you don't have any of your friends or loved ones around anymore. As long as you have a lot of these, what I call fringe benefits of being a Christian, they kind of anchor us here, don't they?
This woman that I was talking about, she walked around and did things for herself, basically. But mm-hmm. She lived there. Actually, she would visit the nursing home, but she was in the independent living section, too. So,
well, if I was living in a nursing home, I'd be wondering why God hadn't taken me either. I've been in those places, and I guess they have some nice ones, but most of them, there's a lot of stuff going on. Okay, anyway, let me see if we can finish Hezekiah tonight, because I don't want to have to go back over this again. One of the envoys that is sent is from Assyria, or from Babylon. Babylon right now is just a small nation. Matter of fact, Habakkuk hasn't even been born yet. And God tells him, I'm working a work. I'm going to raise up Babylon, and you won't believe it if I tell you. So it was still small then. And King Hezekiah is so impressed with them that he shows them everything he has. And then Isaiah comes and says, the days are coming when this king that you just showed all this stuff to is going to take everything that's here, and he's going to make your sons eunuchs. Now, his response is very puzzling to me. I don't want to say negative things about him, but I can't comprehend why he would say that. The word of the Lord which you have spoken is good. At least there will be peace and truth in my days. So what does he care about his kids?
Nothing.
See, I don't know. It just strikes me. I would rather have terrible things occur while I'm still here to help than I would to say, well, I hope I can get out of here before all these terrible things happen. And that's, I think, a more Christ-like attitude is let's take on as much as we can to make things easier for other people. But he doesn't have an attitude. But before we're careful, you know, you don't want to go too far one way or another. But when you read the next verse, it kind of gives you a sense of what's about to happen. So, and since we're about out of time, let me go ahead and read that. 2 Chronicles 32:25. Hezekiah did not repay according to the favor shown him. And the New American Standard has gave no return for the benefit he received. Now, what does that mean? God did him a favor and he did not repay him. God did him a favor and he got no return for it. What does that mean?
How he served him? Or?
Okay, he didn't. Did he keep his promise? Did he praise God the rest of his life? No, because God didn't get any return. Did he remain in the bitterness of his soul and stay humble? No, because he gave God no benefit. He gave God no, he did not repay God. His heart was lifted up. Therefore, wrath was looming over him and over Judah and over Jerusalem. Now, does God's wrath kindle that easily? If he's just a little bit off, does God generally show this kind of wrath until they reach a point? If wrath is looming over Judah and Jerusalem, we're back to where we were. And so Hezekiah has really slipped. And that's what's led me sometimes to think maybe God was doing him a favor. Maybe God was offering him the opportunity to leave this life at the pinnacle of his faithfulness to God so he wouldn't have to regret these 15 years, which I'm sure if he got to heaven, would he be regretting what he'd done after God did all this for him? See, Paul never lost sight of the fact that he'd done things. And of course, at some point, that's not going to matter anymore. I don't think Paul, hopefully anyway, you think he's still feeling guilty up there now for what he did? Yeah, I don't think so. Okay, and then the last thing, and I wish we could go over this, because this was really the heart of the lesson, but I'll preach on it some of these days. But he did not keep his commitment. But just before, in 2 Chronicles, that very last verse, it says, "Then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, and he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord did not come upon them in the days of Hezekiah." But here's the problem. His son Manasseh, he lived for 15 more years. His son Manasseh was 12. So 15 minus 12 is what? 3 years. So in 3 years, Manasseh was born, right? He hadn't been born yet. He wasn't 18. He was 12, but Hezekiah still had 15 more years. So 15 minus 12 is 3 years, so it's not for 3 years. Does that make sense now?
No, I think he is 3 years old, right? So if he's three...
Plus 15.
You're saying he would...
He couldn't be born for 3 more years. Because he's not
18. After he was given the news, saying. After he was given the news, he died. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Okay, but either way, it doesn't matter. The point is, what kind of a father did Manasseh see? Did he see this faithful guy that had been faithful for 20 years? No, he grew up under an unfaithful man who repented at the end but did not change. He became one of the worst kings that Israel ever, or Judah that ever had. And yet, one interesting thing, this repentance of Hezekiah, Manasseh is the only king, wicked king, who at the end of his life repented and God relented. He'd sent him off to Babylon. He was in prison in Babylon. He repented. He asked God to forgive him. God took him back and let him be king again. Now, how in the world did God do all that? And we don't know, but it shows the power. All right, well, I would have liked to have maybe had the class unfold a little bit differently, but you always think that after the class is over. So we did the best we could. Thank you.